This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to this session on heritage, owning reality to seize opportunity. Our speaker, Kyle Stalsus, is currently serving in communications at Faith Builders. Kyle is impressed by what Anabaptism has to offer the world. He considers indulgent indifference and reactionary departure of this Anabaptist culture to both be rejections of our heritage. I look forward to hearing what you have to say. Come up and I'll pray for you to start. Father, pray that your blessing on Kyle today. Give him inspiration as he talks, and I pray that you would speak through him to give us something we need to hear. And that this really would be something that would shape our future and that would really make a difference in our lives. I pray that you'd be with him and give him a lot of grace. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Another thing also, does everybody have a handout? Anybody need a handout? Okay, very good.
What is a heritage? And why does it matter if you have one or if you don't? Because we all do. But what is it? I'd like to illustrate this, and to illustrate it, I'm going to need 6 volunteers. I would like at least 2 of these volunteers to be ladies, up to 4. Okay, so let's start off, and I would like a man, first of all, to volunteer. Come on up front here and join me, please. Okay, come on up here. I'm going to be giving you names, so we're going to be learning a little bit about heritage today, and this particular heritage, which I'll call Anabaptism, he just stands right there. He's just taking an alter ego. Welcome, Michael Sadler. Another person, another male, please. One man. Yes, great. Come on up. And after this, there will be another man. Another one, please. We're progressing. You see the time's moving forward. Who else can come on? Yes, thank you. And now a lady. One lady. Who's feeling brave? Yes, great. One for you. Another lady. Thank you, Lily. Perfect fit. And this one could be anybody. Okay, one more person. Who will it be? Great, thank you. Now, some of these names might be familiar to you. I'd expect some of them are absolutely unfamiliar, but Michael Sadler, just a few words about you. You were born in 1490. You died in 1527. You were born in Germany and became a monk. And is that disappointing? It gets better, okay? You made your way to Zurich during the beginning of the Reformation, which, if you know something about Zurich, this is the cradle of Swiss Anabaptism, or of Anabaptism in general.
So I like traveling.
You do like traveling. Fantastic. And you're also a very passionate person, but you've also got a lot of theological training. So as this Anabaptist movement got started, he helped to formulate one of the first doctrinal statements of Anabaptism, and that's the Schleitheim Confession. Okay, very significant. Now, this came with a cost. Schleitheim Confession was chaired in February of 1527 by Michael Sadler, and in May of 1527, that's 3 months later, Michael Sadler was hunted down, he was horribly tortured, and he was killed. Okay? Thank you, Michael. You can stay right there, though. We still need you. You're part of this heritage. Now, it wasn't too long after that, partly because of the religious pressure that Anabaptists were facing, but we think a lot because of economic opportunity that was being found in the Americas. Anabaptists began to move to America to seek out that economic opportunity. And the first permanent Mennonite congregation or Anabaptist congregation was formed in Germantown in 1683. That is about 70 miles from here. Okay? And this is where you come in, Juan Linson. Okay? You were a linen weaver who leased from a much larger plot of land, from a much larger landowner, about 50 acres of land. You moved here in the late 1600s in the Germantown area. Your payment for that land, you were to work for the landowner for anywhere up to, let's see, about 12 days each year, and you were to clear off 8 acres of that land that you received. Also, this payment, when this big landowner's son came over later, you taught him his trade, which was linen weaving. Okay? So you got 50 acres of land, and you were basically working like an indentured servant. Not a big name, but this is significant. There's now a movement. We've come across the sea. Samuel Groth, 18th century. This story starts with Samuel's father, but it ends with you. It's an interesting story. In 1716, some runaway horses led Samuel's father on a bit of a chase. It took him down to a stream, and as they moved up the stream, your father realized that this land had some value. He followed the stream all the way up to its head, where it runs into the Conestoga River, from its head down to where it runs into the Conestoga River, and he purchased 1,500 acres of that land. This is still Samuel's father. 1,500 acres of that land in what is now known as Five Pointsville. Now, that land was got for a few hundred dollars. That land was given to Samuel Groth. Actually, it was parceled out a little bit, and Samuel Groth received some of that land. Imagine what 1,500 acres of land in Five Pointsville is worth right now. That was given to you. What a way to get started.
I'm a relative.
And you're a relative?
I am.
Oh, wonderful. How do you know that?
Oh, because I know that story and relate to the Groffs.
Yeah. It's an outstanding story, I think. Susanna Harding. You are the wife of Samuel Harding. Okay? And we're skipping over a lot here. There's a lot. There's the Revolutionary War, there's the Civil War. And Anabaptists continue to change, they continue to develop, they continue to find their way and their place in American culture. It's not always an easy thing, but they're defining themselves, they're working with it. And then, this is in the 1880s, you helped, alongside your husband, to establish a mission work among the Indians in Oklahoma. This was the first formal organized mission outreach among American Mennonites. There'd been outreach, but this was organized, and they took you and displaced you and worked with you, financed you, gave you the resources you needed to make this work among these Indians. You took young Indians out of their culture and taught them Christianity and white culture hand in hand. And it's a motto of mission that's kind of frowned on these days, but that's how mission was done. Okay, you had many setbacks along the way. You seemed unable to win many Indians over to an ongoing Christian faith. However, it was a start. And the kind of courage that you exhibited was something that would inspire many people to follow. My grandparents, my grandmother, this feels appropriate, this is my sister Lillian. Okay? My grandmother just passed away this past Sunday. And with her goes a lot of memories that I can remember, well, especially my grandfather, but you remember with my grandmother some of the history that happened. Okay, what did she see? She saw a world war. She saw transitions like maybe a movement from small scale farming to large in her case, or a movement from this agricultural view of life to something that was more industrial and more factory based. She saw airline travel, right? She saw jet airlines. She saw, well, think about it, and ask your grandparents, okay? If you've got grandparents, ask them, what have they seen? What's changed? They've seen computers go from something that weighed 15 tons and took up many rooms this size, and they're now totally outpaced by one of these, right? And this is just a Moto G. Get an iPhone, right? They've seen that. Now, there's you. This is you. What are you going to see? What do you dream about? What do you want in life? What hopes do you harbor? What fears do you have? What do you anticipate? It's coming your way. This is the first insight. We start all the way here with Michael. We progress, we move forward, but we come to you, okay? But the first insight here is just that you are not your own. You are not your own. And a lot of what heritage means is just saying that you've been formed in ways which you can't take full responsibility for, but you can't take credit for as well. Maybe another way to say this is you haven't packed your own bags. We tend to think of baggage as bad things, but baggage is just the accumulation of as this moves across, you accumulate things, you accumulate practices and habits, you accumulate a way of looking at the world, a way of assessing what's good and what's bad. And a lot of this is really valuable. You can call it bags, right? It's your baggage, and you haven't packed it. A lot of who you are in that baggage is something that started way back here and has moved forward. Oh, of course there's been changes. Of course there's been wrongs, there's been missteps. But this is, in a large degree, making up who you're becoming. Thank you very much. You can sit down. Just take your signs with or lay them somewhere. It's fine. So the first insight here is just that you are not your own. And following that one up very quickly is a second insight. And that's just that not everyone who was up here was a hero, okay? And in fact, you look at some of these folks and they took missteps. They tried. They worked with what they had. And you would see if by any means of measuring how well they did in terms of souls won or progress made or however we tend to look at this very superficially many times, they didn't necessarily get things moving forward very well. You wouldn't think of them as heroes. And that's the second insight here, is just that a large part of owning a heritage and owning our personal past, but if you look at it in terms of that many centuries of heritage like we had up here, a large part of owning heritage is taking ownership of all parts of it. I mean, the good parts of it, the ordinary parts of it, the everyday grind parts of it, the questionable parts of it, and maybe even the bad parts. And I'm not saying by that, by taking ownership of the bad parts of your heritage, that you somehow excuse yourself from them. I'm saying that by recognizing them and saying something needs to be done about that, you actually see a chance of redeeming it, okay? But you have to see it. And to see it, you need to take ownership of it. You need to take responsibility for it. You need to be the one who does that. So I'm going to encourage us in this session to take ownership of our heritage. And I mean by ownership, all of it, okay? At least for this session, will you let me do that? Can we do that? Thank you. Permission's helpful. I see some divided interest here, though. Be easy on me. So this session is about heritage, about taking ownership of that part of our story that begins before we were born, and building on that heritage by taking ownership of it, capitalizing on it, giving it good things to ground itself and move forward with and advance on. And the reason we do that is to capitalize it in ways that build the kingdom. I'm going to suggest one way to do that, and that way is grateful ownership. We're going to avoid the thorny issues like, is this heritage a godly one? How do we know when a tradition has moved from a good heritage, one that's lively and dynamic and is responding, its outward focus, to a bad one, one that's stale, one that's ritualistic and obsessed with just maintaining the boundaries, okay? Those are interesting questions. I think maybe sometimes it'd be worth talking about them, but in a lot of ways, my moving past those questions and just saying we're not addressing them is just to focus the issue. I'm not trying to address those questions, not because they're bad questions, but because they just take my focus in a different direction, okay? So it, when you think about this, and if you have questions about as we move ahead, I'm not going to be addressing those, okay? There are possibilities there, we're just not going there. So the question is, what will you do with your heritage? You do have one. I'm going to suggest three possible responses to consider. Like Travis introduced, I lumped together immediately two responses which I feel reject your heritage, if you're considering an Anabaptist heritage. And those responses are inappropriate indulgence or reactive criticism. While the latter one of these, reactive criticism, tends to get more attention as a way of rejecting a heritage, I think both of them actually deserve equal attention. What this means is that I might find myself in the crosshairs of both camps. Okay? So be merciful, please. So, if you are inappropriately indulgent, what do I mean by that? I mean that you're going to wring your hands over the things that are wrong in the heritage, wring your hands over the things you don't like, but you begin to enjoy what's good for your own sake, basically. You enjoy your ability to work hard, make money, and surround yourself with beautiful things. A beautiful car, a beautiful house, hobbies, vacation. You enjoy the friendships that have basically been handed to you. You enjoy the meaning and purpose, which you've just happened by no fault of your own. It's been given to you by your heritage. You maybe wonder if something more could be done. You feel a little bit of guilt. You come to reach. You feel a little bit of shame. And you know that these things that you enjoy aren't bad in and of themselves, and they're not. They're not bad. It's just that if this is all your heritage means, I think you've rejected it. We can't forget as we go into this heritage and as we try to respond to our heritage, we can't forget that those who save their lives will lose them. Okay? But maybe more significantly for us, that it's impossible to be spiritual ancestors to a heritage that includes and emphasizes cross-bearing, suffering, and self-denial while being mostly concerned with getting ourselves through life in the most comfortable and least troublesome way that we can. Okay? I think that's worth saying again. It's impossible to be spiritual ancestors to a heritage that includes cross-bearing, suffering, and self-denial while being mostly concerned with getting our way through life with the least trouble and the most comfort. And shame and guilt, the little bit of shame you feel over not doing enough or whatever it is, though they can actually give you some relief, really don't seem to do very much about changing that situation of indulgence. This isn't an easy thing to say. Okay? It's not an easy thing to receive. The second way of responding to a heritage and rejection is to respond critically and walk away. The most popular way out these days seems to be something like hating religion and loving Jesus. You get rid of all this stuff, these empty rituals, this emphasis on guilt, dress maybe, the duplicity that you see in people who say, I'm part of this heritage and it includes cross-bearing and lives which seem to be obsessed with accumulation, with comfort, with navigating past problems in a way that just doesn't let it hang on you. And those are real issues, right? Um, But often I think what I hear coming through, if you're trying to hate religion and love Jesus, is that if only we could get away from tradition, if only we could entirely do away with heritage, and then we could get on with the work of actually following Jesus. But the reality there is that view is a tradition in and of itself. And that view is a tradition which has a long heritage behind it, and a heritage which involves a really spotty track record, okay? You can't, by rejecting one tradition, somehow escape tradition entirely. You only join another one. But here's the fundamental problem with both of these ways of looking at tradition and rejecting it. I think that both options make too much of it. They make too much of heritage. They make too much out of tradition. One finds completion and fulfillment in inappropriate ways. It says baby in bathwater. What bathwater? All we've got here is baby, right? Enjoy it. It's great. Just don't talk about bathwater. It's not there. The other, in reaction, just chucks the whole thing. Baby, bathwater, tub, plumbing, house, it all goes, right? Right? It's just a rejection of the whole thing. You just chuck it all. Because the problem here is that the problem that they share is that neither one of them recognize what the house was actually for. The point of building houses is to make homes. And the point of making homes is to make a place where people can actually move forward and enjoy the blessings of the kingdom, but also progress the movement of the kingdom and see it propelled forward, right? The point of a home is to serve God and to serve Jesus. And that's what the point of a tradition is. The point of a tradition isn't it a means in itself. And the point of a tradition isn't to be rejected. It's something you use. It's a means to an end. It's not the end in itself. Okay? So when Jesus runs into people with a long religious heritage, we'd call them Jews, when he runs into these people with a long heritage behind them, his message seems to consistently be to those people, use that heritage for good. Okay? The message is not along the lines of get rid of that heritage. It's just holding you back. Get rid of it. And it's not indulgence. And Jesus is amazing here. He had this ability to see right past those structures and to encounter individuals and to see within each individual, you believe. Now use that religious structure you have for good. Okay? Use those religious structures for good. Don't squander them, but don't abandon them. Much more could be said. So I suggest a third option, a building embrace. Embrace it and build on it. You want to run light, okay, through life. You want to run light. Don't fight or run uncertainly like someone who beats the air. You want to rid yourself of encumbrances as you follow Jesus, including reaction or indifference. Assume that there will be problems and inconsistencies. What is that to you, though, right? What are those things to you? Follow him. Build on it, not because it's a perfect house, but because it's a good one. These practices, these beliefs you have, these values that you've inherited, they're good ones. And recognize here, too, that it takes a while to build a house. It takes a while to build a heritage. And we frequently fail when we try. So build on the good foundations, the good structure that's there. Build with humility. Build with gratitude, because your heritage is giving you a lot. How do we do this? Two basic principles. To do this, to build gratefully on a heritage, I'm going to address two ways to do this. The first is to identify strengths and then to capitalize on the strengths. So as you build, as you embrace, as you receive, and as you build, build with gratitude. And here I want to spend a little bit of time for us. This is worth spending some time on. Strengths. You notice a strength typically when you feel grateful about something, okay? When you feel gratitude, you've noticed something that's strong and good and wholesome. So what I want to do is, as we identify strengths, think about questions like this. How was God's presence, or how was God's grace present to you through your heritage? How were you blessed? Okay? What were you given? And I'll get us started here with just a short story. This was about 2 months ago. My wife, Marlene, was down with a stomach bug. And to give her a little bit of a relief, I decided I'm going to take our two children, a four-year-old and a two-year-old, out for supper. And as we were going through Meadville, the town nearby, our oldest pointed out Wendy's. We don't often go to Wendy's. We've never been to this Wendy's. I thought, hey, sure, why not? We'll give it a try. We go in there, and I didn't have many high expectations, right? It's a burger joint. You go there to get a little food. But our host, Arcella, seemed to take a real interest in our two children. And she must have been watching us eat. They were doing fine. Our children were demolishing their burgers. They were hungry. They were excited to get out there. I didn't really think that they were doing anything exceptional, though. But as she was watching them, and yeah, it's worth saying here, too, they weren't making a fuss, right? They were just being what you basically expect a good Mennonite child to be in a public setting. And what I didn't realize that was that Arcella was watching us. And something about the behavior of our children connected with her in a way that I didn't expect. As we're getting done with our meal, she comes walking out. She has two Frosties. I was thinking of buying them Frosties for myself. But she comes out, she has two Frosties, she gives them. She's like, oh, do you mind if I just give these to your children? They're being so well behaved and they're so beautiful. And I just love seeing you out here. And I love that you're out here. Okay, we're at a burger joint, lady. I bought these with my own money, she says, and she puts them on the table. And it started something in the atmosphere of the place. And there's these two grandparents come by, our elderly-looking couple, and they talk to me about my children. They say how beautiful they are, how well-behaved. We love what you're doing with your children. You're raising them so well. They're gushing over me. What did I do? Right? I took two Mennonite children out to eat. We had some burgers. Somebody gave us some food. And all of this gushing over us, can I take credit for that? How did I learn that? They noticed something there about our children, and it was something which reflected a heritage. Sure, I try to do a good job of raising my children. I try. I fail. I've read part of one parenting book in my whole life. Right? Where did I learn that? That's a heritage at work. Okay? So, to start this list, as you think about areas of gratitude, one area of gratitude that this story identifies to me is simply this. Seek your families. Our families aren't perfect, okay? We all know that. They're far from perfect. But they are secure. And you know what kind of children that family is producing and how significant that is with the kind of cultural pressures that child's going to face? Do you realize what the average American child has to endure? Do you realize what you're giving your child as part of this heritage? Okay? Take just a minute, okay? I want to give you all a little bit of space here before we open this up. Take just a minute and work at this, okay? What areas of gratitude, what strengths do you notice in our heritage, in your heritage as you look back on it, okay? I'll give you a minute here. Go for it. Write down as many as you can. 15 more seconds. Getting them all? Time. Okay. I have to be up front with you. There's no second hand on that clock. So when I said 15 seconds, I think I was bluffing. Okay. Let's move ahead. So, help me out a little bit here. I want to build out a bit of a list here, and we'll take maybe, about 5 minutes on this. So, what do you have? Okay, you've all had some space here. What belongs up on this board? What are some strengths that you notice?
Biblical knowledge.
Biblical knowledge, great.
Literal commitment to till death do us part.
Wow, uh-huh.
Good work ethic.
Uh-huh.
And a high regard for that knowledge of Scripture that you have.
A high regard. And what that means is there's a commitment to it, but you also mean that this biblical knowledge actually means something, right? It actually influences how you think about the world and how you conduct your life. How did you summarize that again?
Scriptural authority. Very
yes.
High regard for Scripture.
Uh-huh.
First one would be surrounded by communities.
Communities, yes. This is so transparent to us, right? We don't frequently build barns anymore, in barn raisings, that is, but do you realize how significant it is that you can say, you can be along the road and your car is not starting, and you have somebody to reach out to, okay? And even though you might call AAA, you don't need to. Or if you do get hung up in West Virginia, you probably have a connection there somewhere that would take you in. And they might just leave the key out for you. That's community at work. A powerful thing. What else?
Great musical capacity.
Musical capacity. Wonderful.
One thing that my father drilled into us that ties in to secure families was respect for women.
Respect of women. Uh-huh. In a lot of ways you can gauge many times, I think, the health of a community, of a family by how women or by how weaker people are regarded. Okay?
Peacemakers.
You talk about relevance and being a relevant subgroup within a larger mainstream Christianity. Do you realize how relevant it is becoming anymore to have a heritage which consistently, you look back at it, there is a clear voice all the way through of saying, where there's fighting, we are the people who bear peace. This is enormous in today's situation. And this is, I think, one of the significant issues why Christianity has ceased to be a strong cultural force is because of its willingness to use coercion. That's going to be a big one. Okay. Who else? Anything else? What's missing?
Simplicity or frugality.
Yeah.
Could be debatable, but.
Sure. It's a means to an end, right? Life skills. Somebody else starting.
Strong sense of morality.
You have a view of what's right and what's wrong. That's becoming kind of rare, isn't it?
Removal from politics.
Removal from politics. Why is that important?
separation of church and state.
Okay, why is that important? I'm picking on you.
People on the lines can tend to conflate the two. The role of independent state, the role of the church, and the church has the role of the state. General partisanship and what it's done to the country and keeping a different perspective on that, I have to do that.
Great, so you're saying in these conversations and the very divided and polarized way that our nation is operating right now, last election revealed some of that, regardless of what you think of those two people. regardless of what you think about it, we have a very polarized country, and we say, where there's polarization, we're peacemakers, and you know what? We've never been part of this. Not consistently, anyway. There are exceptions. Okay? One more. Anybody else? Yes?
There's a thing of trust we sometimes did capitalize on us, and we call it gullible. But I think it comes from interrelating closely with family and brotherhood.
Uh-huh.
We're not used to viewing everything in a suspicious manner.
Incredible.
That people we encounter are so suspicious, and I've been trying to think through that. And I realize, well, I grew up just trusting people around.
Yeah.
And what they tell me is true.
Amazing. Now, clearly, you know, this isn't a comprehensive lift, right? And why idolizing this and saying that this is everything or this is all that matters, I think you'd be falling very quickly toward the first of those options that I put there as a rejection. So we don't want to go there. But what I want to drive us toward is to take ownership of this and to capitalize on it. You find these strengths, you identify them, you pass them on, enlarge them, and exercise them. You capitalize them and expend them for the use of the kingdom. And there's three attitudes I'm going to identify as you go about this capitalizing. How do you do it? The first attitude is humility. Give up this terrible notion that you're a self-made person. Give up the American dream of finding freedom in the absence of restraint and the expansion of resources to increase your self-reliance and push back against the lie that freedom is going where you want to do, going where you want to go, doing what you want to do, and living how you want to live. You are not your own. You haven't made yourself. You weren't made for yourself. And this requires humility to actually recognize that. It's just worth saying that humility is required if you're going to build on something that someone else has worked on. You can't take so much credit for it. It takes humility. Second attitude, gratitude. Gratitude just helps us to recognize that everything we have is of grace. There is no room for smugness or disdain in God's kingdom. What good we have is ours because it is a gift. Being given, taking this position also of gratitude puts you into a position that allows you to receive the good of a heritage while cultivating a positive vision for its use. You see better, you see more clearly when you're grateful. Okay? You see more clearly when you're grateful. And plus, this just means that when you tend to be a grateful person, people hear you better when you have something negative to say. Because there are things wrong, and there's negative things that need to be said. But when you're typically grateful, people hear them better. A third attitude, cross-bearing. Self-denying dedication to advance the cause of Christ. Now, I've mentioned already that this heritage is one that already includes a lot about self-denial and cross-bearing. So in your building of this heritage, you'd better be ready to renounce yourself and your identity to instead identify with Jesus and his suffering. And this is going to include internal conflict as you wrestle with these very selfish ways of living that come very naturally to us. And you attack them because your self-absorbed ways of living are not Calvary-like ways of living. It's going to include that internal conflict, but also the external cost. I mean economic cost. I mean social cost. I mean the real material kinds of cost that actually come with renouncing a lifestyle of self-interest, giving up on it, and taking a different direction. There's an old saying that smooth seas don't make good sailors, and what's true of sailors is true of anyone who is wishing to take up the cross. We don't learn to be followers of Jesus best when things are going well, okay? We don't learn to be followers of Christ when things are going well, but when they are difficult. And these desires and ways of thinking that Christ brings to us aren't possessed best when things are easy, but when the choices that we have to make about how we're going to use our resources and expend ourselves take us in difficult directions and puts us in compromised positions. Those are the choices, I'm saying, that develop us into a cross-bearing sort of person. So life doesn't just get better with God. Okay? Jesus doesn't just sweeten the way as we go. He bears a cross and he tells us to pick it up. And that cross includes both the internal conflict we have to give up our selfish ways of thinking and the economic and social costs that we take on ourselves. And that cross that Jesus tells us to pick up isn't one that he's ever going to force on us. He invites us. He says, take up the cross. Follow me. Use your good for my purposes. And that's going to include hardship. He won't force it on you. You have to pick it up. Three quick applications. I'm just going to apply this by asking three questions. I'm going to ask them openly, not offer a lot of response. First question. Who are you? Okay, I take it back. I'll offer a little guidance. Who are you? I'm saying here, you are not your own. So much of your story has been told and formed before you were born. You are not your own. The second question, where are you going? And I'm suggesting, I'm encouraging you, you are going to build Christ's kingdom to serve. The third question, how are you getting there? Using the tools that you've been given by your heritage through no choice of your own, you're getting there by exercising these tools, by enlarging them, by capitalizing them, and building on them. In it, you're going, in your doing, in who you're becoming. In all of your getting there, I pray that God will be with you. There is a second here. Do you have any remarks or questions? Then I'll give it back to Travis. I'd love to visit with you afterwards. That's it.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.